Accession number 18619, real one.
Well, the lady from the office that fixed it up said it'd be all right. And I've been talking and close friends. It has its interesting points and may be of interest to listeners. So, for a start off, I will describe the environment in which I was born. That was off Waterloo Station. I was born in Tennyson Street, which is off York Road, near Waterloo Road. Well, come with me down from Waterloo Bridge on the east side. On the left you find is a way down to the waterside and to the road underneath, and go further on and you come to a corner of Stamford Street, on which there's a children's hospital. Now that at Stamford Street has some interesting points about it. At the end, right at the end of it, on the right hand side, is where Sainsbury's first started their shopping chain, which was very popular in the 90s. So come back now, go down further Waterloo Road, and on the left you find St. John's Church. Now that was of great interest to me. I was christened there, confirmed there in the choir for quite a few number of years, and also spent many hours in the crypt where there was a miniature shooting range, and also we used it for band practice for our bugle band in a church as brigade. The church was situated in a sort of a small garden area, and also had a recreation ground off it. But opposite was the school, St. John's, with All Saints Church School, where my brothers and I ancestor attended until the whole of our educational career, which wasn't much, I might tell you. Anyway, we went there and left at 14, which was the rule of the day on that occasion. Now, right, carrying on down Waterloo Road, on the left you'll pass under two arches, and then come to the Uni Jet Club. Now, that was installed many years ago for the benefit of servicemen on leave from the services who came on and hadn't got any accommodation in London, but they were all sure of a bed in that place. Straight on now along, the next interesting point is the my left hand side called the New Cut, on the corner there was the old Vic. Now there's many people now and have attended there for operas and other theatrical performances, and was most popular. And at the end of the cut, facing it from Blackfriars Road, there was a big establishment there called The Ring. Now that was a centre for many boxing encounters, so very, very popular, and it was very busy at times. Come back to Waterloo Road and you carry on up to the top to St. George's Cervicus. Now let's return to the bridge again, come down the right hand side, come to the bottom, and at the bottom there were always two drag horses, because in those days there weren't the motor haulage that there is today, and many wagons on its way to a common garden needed assistance to pull up that hill, and that's where the drag horses came in. Continued further on, next corner there was the Dookie Hawks pub, and later on another couple of bridges in the exit from Waterloo Station. And along was further is more or less houses and the shops, and you come to St George's Road again. Not Westminster Bridge Road, it's St George's Circus. Now we'll go down there towards the river, and on the left there was the Scholastic buildings, and also Christchurch School Church, which was a lovely church, and that was on the corner of Kennington Road. On the right there was a furniture store, and Getty's the Music Hall. Further along, you come on the left, you come to Canterbury Music Hall, and then a few more steps, and on the right hand side you come to Lower Marsh, which was another marketplace, very popular in those days, and I think it is still. And then proceed along to, on the left you can get to St Thomas's Hospital, and on the right they eventually built County Hall on the Thames side there, which incidentally was occupied by the Ministry of Food in the First World War, and not taken over till sometime in 1919. It was taken over fully by the County Hall, by the council, and the road on the right there before getting to that is York Road, which leads through to Waterloo Road where we started, and on the right there was All Saints Church, underneath which was a hole which was occupied many a night by the Church Lads Brigade for either physical drill or athletics. And on the left there was the Lion Inn Hospital. Further along it was goods yards for the railway, and also the entrance to Waterloo Station. In those days when we were there, that was the entrance, the exit was on Waterloo Road. And further along on the left was Tennyson Street, where I was born. Now, that's a sort of crude description of the environment, and I don't think I've left out any important points of that. I'll start our life story. My father was born in Exeter. He came to London, and my mother was came from Evening Street, Deptford. I don't know any details about their marriage. I only remember that on one occasion, when we were children, and my brother and I were in a choir, we were called to, my mother wanted us to go and sing hymns bedside of her father, who was getting towards the end of his life, and she got permission from the vicar of our church for us to take our Cassis services down there and sing hymns. Now the journey down there was from outside Waterloo Station in the horse trams, and took quite a long time to get to Evening Street, but it was an experience, I suppose. And that I don't think there's any other incidents that happened in that area. So there was another one. My younger brother and I were in the Church Lads Brigade. And during the coronation George the Fifth, when we were on their second coronation day, when they do the tour of South London, And the company which we were in, the Chelsea Red Brigade, were given the honour of lining London Bridge, which was quite a future for quite a thing for a lad of our description. Anyway, that it, I think that was more or less all that I could tell you about that area. But anyway, as I was saying, my father, he was a ticket printer, railway ticket printer, and built the printing works were quite close to the Waterloo Station. And eventually he was given the job of being caretaker there, so that meant moving into a little street called Robert Street, which of course is no longer there. And we moved in there, and it was quite comfortable. That was all right until, oh, then later on when they started thinking of enlarging Waterloo Station, we had to move out there to a place next door in Mepham Street, which was quite a nice little house, and we were there until, I suppose, about 1909 or 1910. We had to move out of there and go into another place way back further in the borough, a place called Fraser Street. Now, that was a three-bedroom house, which was a very poor, dilapidated place, with the only tap being in the yard at the back, which we had to watch during the cold weather. And we were there until, I think after we got married, my mother left there somewhere about 1932 or something like that. But anyway, we... I've lost the drift now. One thing about us living there, my parents were very loyal people, very loyal indeed. They reveled in us going to all these functions that we attended, and also going to see processions, Lord Mayor's shows and all that sort of business. And being near the station, we were able to see the coming and going of notables at Waterloo Station from an vantage point. And then, excuse me, then we, dear, lost for words, aren't I? We lived a sort of quiet life there, and joined all sorts of clubs. I joined the Royal Navy Volunteer Reserves for a start, and when they wanted to form a bugle band, and we used to go to have our regular holidays. One year we went to Sheerness, where my mother had a brother live in, and used to house us for a month down there. And the alternate year, we went to a place in the suburb called Denham, where my mother had another brother, sister, I think, there, who they were housed in a tied cottage. That was a bit grim because they had no water, no gas or anything like that, and used to get their water from a pond nearby, which you had to be bored every time, of course. But we rubbed along and enjoyed our month's holiday there. And as far as my father was concerned, he never went on holiday at all. He did come down to Sheerness the year we were going there in the morning and come back at night time, but he couldn't do that when we went to Suffolk. But he took his holidays regularly, and he used to go over most days to see the changing of God. He was always thrilled with that, and as I say, most loyal. He was very proud of the fact that he had three sons go to the war, and my elder brother, he joined the when the war broke out, but he finished up as a drill instructor and in India. My younger brother, he was at school when the war started, but eventually got into the war, and he saw quite a bit of fighting. In fact, he had to cross the Albert River, I think it was, in full rig on one occasion, which was quite a dramatic moment. Anyway, we all came back safe without any wounds at all. And so life went on like that, and then, of course, the incidentally, I didn't mention when talking about life before the war, that I was at the, when I left school, I was given a job as a boy messenger at the embassy. Now that was quite a lift up for me, I suppose. And one of the jobs that a boy messenger had to do was to carry files from one messenger's lobby to the next, and do that every half hour. On one occasion, I was walking from round to the, round to the side of the Admiralty. It was out looking onto Parliament, or to Horse Guards Parade. Now, Mr. Churchill was a Sea Lord in those days, no, First Lord, and he used to have a private key to with a door on, looking out onto the parade, which he used to use every day. One day he was coming up there about half past 10 and humming to himself, I think he was watching him shuffling along, and I nearly knocked him over. Well, there was a bit of a fuss about that, and after that, that section of the corridor was banned from messengers until 11 o'clock each day. Anyway, that wasn't the first encounter I had with Churchill. Not any roughness about it at all. But when we we gradually got into the way of things, you know, and then the war started coming along, and on the night before that 1418 war broke out, I was at Hyde Park listening to the band, and I got home as usual at about half past nine or something like that. Opened the door, and on the floor were two official envelopes. One was from the customs. Oh, I didn't tell you about the experience with the custom house. I entered an exam there for a preventative officer, and passed. And eventually, a group of us, eight of us, were called, the successful candidates, were called to the custom house to do, going for a rowing test. What we had to do was to sit in a 18-foot whaler with 16-foot oars, one each, and row across the Thames and back again. Of course, there weren't any fast motorboats in those days. And we did that and collected in a room afterwards, medically examined, and we told, okay, we're all free, you'll hear from us in due course. Well, I did. That was when the envelopes was on the floor. It pointed me to a post to somewhere on the East Coast, which of course I couldn't take because the other envelope was calling me up with the Royal Navy Volunteers being called up for service. And that started the ball rolling as far as the war was concerned. Well, of course, I got indoors and got into my uniform, reported to headquarters, and they noted the fact and also gave me a bosun's whistle, put me on the gate, and I had to blow up the notes on the bosun's whistle and report who was coming through. And that went on till about 11 o'clock. They said, you better go home and we'd report back here at 9 o'clock tomorrow. And that went on for some time. And eventually we got orders to proceed to the Kent coast to Kingstown near Deal. And they'd prepared a camp there under bell tents for us. And I suppose that was about towards the end of August when we were all transported down there. And the only difference about it was that we were given sixpence a day extra money for what they call hard layers for laying on the ground. Of course, we had straw sacks, of course. And we got they disbanded the bugle band. I was a drummer in it, and I said, well, what shall I do? They said, get hold of a bugle and go down to the front every morning and practice some calls. You've got to be a bugler. Oh, so okay, I made instructions, and we used to go down there, a group of us, play a few calls, and if it was a fine day, we were in the water swimming. Oh, thinking what a lovely war this was. And anyway, I was called on to be the duty bugler on one occasion when the regular one had to go with a funeral party, one of our poor chaps had passed on. And they called me out to blow for cooks. I knew what tune it was, but I couldn't get a blinking thing out of the bugle at all. So one of the chaps there, he knew a bit about it, he did it for me. And another occasion, I was with the... we were practicing procedures and that, you know, charging of various spots on the back of Folkestone and that. And I was given the job of attending the officer of the guards who was training our lads. They'd had no training, of course. Actually, the crowd that was down there was the Royal Naval Division. It was formed of the London Division of the RNVR and some the first recruits of the Kitchener's Army. At that time, they had posters all over the place with a picture of Kitchener pointed to you, the Army wants you. And we got a lot of those. But none of them had any drill or anything like that. And anyway, as I say, we saw these... I was with this officer, this Scots Guard officer, and and the troops were proceeding in single file across a field. Then they got the order to charge. Then they got the order to halt. The officer said to me, "Blow the halt." I said, "Of course, I was only beginning to learn the calls on the bugle." And I said, "I'm sorry, sir, I don't know." He said, "For God's sakes, blow something." So I blew the carry-on, which actually was a double amount of the halt side. The halt was da-da, the carry-on was da-da-da-da. So that wasn't too far out. Well, that went on for quite a time. Until the 4th of October 1914, when we were ordered to ship to Antwerp. We got orders to strike camp, and on the night of late evening on the 4th of October, we marched into Dover and boarded the, I think the name of the vessel was the Mount Temple troop ship, and it was a bit of, I used to say I was going on a cook's tour. Anyway, we got the ship loaded and all the kit bags were on there. So first job I did when I got there was climb all over the kit bags. Got told off for that, but still, I worry. And we travelled over at night and landed at Dunkirk, and from there proceeded to Antwerp in the morning. Now, it was a sorry sight when we got to Antwerp. Got into near the harbour, and all the ships were burning light, and terrible. And then we had to proceed further along and march in towards the trenches, they said. And on our way, we passed a lot of refugees coming out of Antwerp and making their way to safer places down south. And they had bits and pieces they could carry with them. And all of a sudden we got a shout to stand off the road, let a motor vehicle exit that was coming along. Who should be in it but Churchill and a war office official named Colonel Seeley. And they passed us by and gave us a wave, and that was on our second encounter with him anyway. And anyway, we reached the trenches and got into our position underneath. And they started forming a guard, just two people on guard. Of course, they did it by alphabetical order. My name was on the top of the list. And here, I was a lad of 18, posted on a point, got all my ammunition round, and loaded rifle, and told to mount their guard for two hours. There I was in sort of in the dark, looking here, there, and every now and then, an officer came round and asked whether I heard anything. I said, "Well, shooting over there, sir, but nothing else. See some flares going up, sir." So I said, "Well, carry on. You'll be in a relief soon," which I was. And that sort of life went on for a couple of days, and then we got orders to evacuate. Just prior to that, we were told to fire 20 rounds point blank straight ahead, open range. What we were firing at, God above knows, but we did as instructed and fired open range. Well, eventually we were lined up in the road and marched quite a distance and boarded open cattle trucks, and they were